Hey, and welcome to the Bossed Up Podcast, episode 406. I'm your host, Emily Aries, the founder and CEO of Bossed Up. And today I am delighted to be joined by Jeff Carey, a friend who I crossed paths with first at a recent Colorado SHRM, or Society of Human Resource Management conference, where Jeff was presenting a workshop called Dudes Do Better. And he and I basically bonded at that moment and haven't stopped hitting each other up for opportunities for collaboration ever since. I'm so excited for you to meet Jeff. He is a fascinating person, very knowledgeable in all things related to leadership development and gender in the workplace. And today's conversation will touch upon all kinds of elements related to what Jeff calls toxic masculine leadership practices. So we're going to break down what that means, why toxic masculinity is so detrimental to the workforce, to the workplace, and frankly, society at large. As a quick trigger warning, we do talk about mass shootings a few different times throughout this episode. So I just want to put that out there. If this is not a safe episode for you to listen to, this is a perfectly fine one to skip, and I'll see you on the next one. Before we dive in, let me give you a little more background on Jeff. Jeff Carey combines positive psychology and play to heal workplaces, help teams build psychological safety, and assist individuals in addressing their biggest challenges by embracing a play-oriented approach to work. Jeff was selected by Bamboo HR and Engagely as one of the top 100 HR influencers and has been featured in the New York Times, Mashable, Upworthy, HuffPost, Shondaland, and Wired. He's worked with Google, Microsoft, Southwest Airlines, Adobe, the NFL, Amazon, and Facebook, helping their staff to infuse more play into the day-to-day. Over the past 15 years of facilitation and speaking, Jeff's main goal has been to help work suck less by assisting leaders in building a playground workplace atmosphere that motivates their staff to do their most vibrant work. Jeff Carey, welcome to the Bossed Up Podcast.
Oh, I'm excited. Let's get started.
So, Jeff, we first met at the Colorado SHRM conference where you spoke on a workshop you presented called Dudes Do Better. I'm curious to learn, first and foremost, how did you get into this kind of work? How did you find yourself focused on leadership development as it relates to gender?
So, as many of us know, work sucks right now, and it really doesn't have to. And throughout all of my travels, especially going to so many HR conferences, that is the vibe that I've gotten, especially when I talk to a lot of employees, regardless of what part of the country I'm at. And I used to run a workshop with my colleague Gary Ware called Dealing with A-Holes in the Workplace. And we ran this in Inbound in Boston and also in Australia right before the pandemic. And as we continued to run it, I realized the toxicity problem wasn't just toxicity, it was a type of leadership that we've been celebrating for so long. And I finally boil it down to being like toxic masculine leadership, which can be exhibited by anybody, right? It can be exhibited by a man, woman, someone who identifies as trans, like however you identify, you still could exhibit it because there are these certain traits of toxic masculine leadership, like bullying and masking aggression or masking insecurity with aggression, that show up over and over again. And we've been celebrating it, especially in the media, for at least the last 100 years, you know, from the Rockefellers and Carnegies to now the Elon Musks, Jeff Bezos, and Steve Jobs of the world. And my question through the workshop was like, we have to be better, and specifically dudes have to be better, because this is not really helping work to suck less.
Yeah. That's interesting. You know, when you say insecurity masked with aggression, I think that is a very specific symptom almost of toxic masculine leadership styles. That reminds me of my early career days in campaigns and elections, when I would have to often take the campaign manager aside and say, you need to stop screaming at each other. You're scaring the volunteers. And can you imagine a world in which, and this happens right in law firms and finance companies all over the world every day, where raising your voice and screaming at your colleagues is just accepted as, oh, you know, he's a hot-headed asshole, but he gets things done. Like, that's sort of what you're talking about. Is that right?
Yeah. And it's interesting because we both did similar campaign work, right?
That's right.
And it's fascinating that in the campaign world, as well as my friend told me, in the chef world and other worlds, it's accepted that you can just be a horrible individual and just like, well, that's just the way things are. When we know from campaign work, especially when I used to go as a volunteer into a campaign office, I didn't go to the campaign manager to find out what to do. I looked around the room and whoever everyone was going to, the GSD or the get stuff done person, who usually did not have a title, was the person that was the best motivator and the person that knew what was actually going on. And the more we can celebrate GSDers and not accept such horrible behavior, as I think John Amici said, work culture is defined by the worst behavior tolerated,
ooh,
right? That's what every organization would be asking. What is the worst behavior we're tolerating? Why are we tolerating that behavior? If we could just address that one thing, everything would get better, right? So we have to be asking ourselves, just because the culture of our industry is toxic doesn't mean we have to be.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's dig into the masculine part of this, right? Because I think when we use the words toxic masculinity in any context, it really does trigger some people. And so what is masculine about being an a-hole at work? And frankly, like, what are we even talking about whenever we're actually having that conversation of toxic masculinity?
Well, I define toxic masculinity as a narrow approach to manhood that is defined by like aggression and, you know, a certain level of machismo and a certain level of like showing strength, right? So it's a very narrow, specific version of manhood. It's the manhood of like, oh, you got injured, walk it off. Oh, don't ever cry, right? You know, and you see a lot of TikTok videos where, you know, someone is asked, who do you call when you're at the worst? And there were a bunch of men who stitched this video and they're like, I have nobody. I have no one to call. I've been told I shouldn't be able to just man up and just do it by myself, right? So like at least many men like myself have received that either from society or from our friends, right? That like if you show any level of empathy or compassion, you know, you're said to be effeminate, right? Like one of the worst things you could be said is that, oh, you're gay. Right? Oh, that's so gay, which is so ridiculous and homophobic. But on top of that, it's also just shows how scared straight men are from being considered something different from like a strong man, right? When it's fascinating when healthy masculinity is built around a certain level of empathy and built around a certain level of brotherhood and actually being able to see one another and creating a safe space where you can share your emotions, right? So that's what we talk about when we're like toxic masculinity versus healthy masculinity.
Totally. And what's interesting there is just to acknowledge that this is a gender stereotype. This is a gender role that is constricting and prescriptive for men as much as it is unhealthy and unpleasant for the rest of us, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think people get understandably defensive, and by people, I really mean men, get understandably defensive when you're calling them toxic, but that's not really what we're doing. We're not saying, men, you're toxic. We're saying this prescriptive societal narrative of what it means to be a tough, rugged, individualistic dude, you know, very cowboy culture being out here in Colorado, that is bad for everybody, isn't it? And it's certainly oppresses men who feel like they can't be vulnerable, who feel like they can't have, you know, phone a friend. This new book that just came out in January is blowing my mind. My favorite book I've read all year, it's called The Good Life. And it is all about how relationships and connection is at the core of a happy life, of a well-lived life. And the study that they've based this book on is the world's longest longitudinal study of men. From Harvard, you know, both in the Boston area who couldn't afford to get into Harvard and men who actually went to and graduated from Harvard in like the 1920s or 30s. And they followed these multiple generations of people and it impacts their health on a physical level, physiological level, in addition to their mental well-being. And so when you describe men who have no one to call, that's a societal health problem. That's a scary situation. This is part of the reason why alcoholism, addiction, suicide, violence, these are all disproportionately negatively impacting men and boys. And that's something we should all be worried about.
And it's also then directing our culture. I mean, you can look directly to mass shootings and attribute a certain connection to toxic masculinity. It's a majority men who are doing this. It's 99% of them are men, right?
Yeah. If that were any other racial group or gender group, it would become a huge public health campaign of like, what's wrong with these people? But because it's white men, we're like, huh.
Absolutely.
What do we do?
Right. So, and then there's this patriarchal push that is really trying to sell right now that you see with the Andrew Tates and Joe Rogans and Jordan Petersons of the world, where they are now creating like this whole campaign that it's like, oh my gosh, everybody is anti-men right now. And they're using the word toxic masculinity and being like, you see, that's the problem. When frankly, when I'm talking about toxic masculinity, I'm talking about a style of leadership, a style of culture that is so repressive that not only does it detrimentally affect the society, as we've seen through mass shootings, but it also detrimentally isolates men so they cannot connect with one another and also cannot connect with women, because the push from, you know, the Jordan Petersons and Andrew Tates of the world is that women are the problem, you know? And it's ironic as well how they do it, because they're like, well, women are gold diggers. Well, the data says that most women now have higher degrees than men and have enough money, so they don't need you to provide in that way. They actually want more emotional intelligence. No, women are gold diggers. Well, that doesn't actually fit the narrative. And what's happening is a lot of men are like, well, I don't know how else to provide for women. I remember making this video a long time ago, this TikTok video, where this guy is literally showing his bank account to a woman. And that was how he wanted to pick her up. He goes, look at my bank account. And she goes, I'm not impressed by that. And he, at that point, was like, well, something's wrong with you. Not that there's something wrong with the fact that I've been lied to by all the men in my life telling me that all I needed was a huge bank account and then I'm a high-valued man, as that term goes. But it's just like, I'm going to instead attack you rather than look inward and be like, oh my goodness, I've been working really hard to make all this money. And that frankly is not what I needed to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a fracturing of what it means to be a good man these days. And there's this fascinating podcast by Ezra Klein featuring a new author, or new to me author, Richard Reeves, whose new book Of Boys and Men led to this 2-hour fascinating conversation with Ezra Klein. I'll drop it in today's show notes. But he cited the Andrew Tates and the Jordan Petersons of the world and said, right now there's a quest. It seems that men are searching for what it means to be a good man now. And they're looking for influencers, sometimes in all the wrong places, to say, like, show me what it looks like to redefine manhood. And I talk with my husband, Brad the Dad, about this all the time, because I've been writing and thinking and studying, you know, women's shifting gender roles in the workforce and in family life for a long time. And I think about the difference between my gender role that I'm playing as a working mom right now compared to my mom before me and her mom before her. And then I look at my husband and think about his dad's involvement in parenting and work, and his granddad's involvement in parenting and work. And really, it's Brad the Dad who's changing a much bigger narrative, who's making a much bigger change right now than I am from generation to generation. And I think there's a lack of clarity. There's a lack of resources for men whose roles are shifting at a faster pace than women's right now. You know, when white women in particular entered the workforce en masse in the 1960s and beyond, we just expanded our roles compared to a massive shift that Brad the Dad, my husband, is going through in his relationship to parenting and housework compared to his father's and compared to his grandfather's. Those are huge differences in what's expected of men, in particularly in hetero, this is all very heteronormative, but in heterosexual, you know, partnerships where egalitarianism is valued, right? There's a lot of shifting terrain there in terms of expectations and roles that I honestly think is leaving feminists like me wondering, and this is inspired by that Ezra Klein interview, like, how do we hold both of these truths at the same time? That women still are held back in the workplace because of systemic gender bias. Women are still not seeing equal opportunity to leadership positions and equal pay, especially moms, while also acknowledging that something's going on with the men and the boys right now, where their roles are shifting and what it means to be a good man is TBD, it feels like. Like, how do we deal with both of those in a workplace at the same time?
What's challenging is ultimately what we're fighting is patriarchy, right? And patriarchy is very binary, right? And it's very supremacist in the sense of like, you have to choose one or you got to choose the other. You have to win or you have to lose, right? So the duality of holding space of like healthy masculinity seems like an oxymoron for a lot of people, right? Think of all the healthy masculine leaders, you know? I think of like right now Barack Obama or a Michael B. Jordan. Great example. Michael B. Jordan is doing Creed 3, right? He's doing it with this guy, Jonathan Majors, another black man. They took a photo together as brothers, almost like holding hands. Twitter freaks out or the internet freaks out because they're like, why are you trying to make these men effeminate, right? And it was just such a reaction because they're like, you see, you're trying to take away. Or I think Rihanna was with her husband, but he was in the background and she was in the front and they freaked out about that. You know, there's so many of those where the incel or the toxic masculine community dives on those things and they're like, you see, this is what's happening. You see, they're trying to take masculinity from men away, right? That's their argument.
Do you think that has something to do with the very real fact that, you know, women's power, economic power, workforce participation and power, home ownership numbers, right? Those are increasing.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're still far from parity, right? We're not at equality or equity yet. But, you know, I think back to that saying that, you know, when you've been the dominant race or gender, a little bit of equality starts to feel like oppression, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Any loss of power,
right,
you know, threatens your privilege, right? I mean, you have the same population that has benefited for so long and pretended like they didn't benefit. Like, us men never benefited. Like, we pulled ourselves up from the bootstraps and we got everything because we're really good, rather than be like, it was a boys club and you simply hired people that looked just like you or went to your frat. You don't want to admit that, you know? So now that you're losing even more power, there is people that feel insecure will run towards someone like an Andrew Tate because they're so loud.
Right.
While a lot of healthy masculine leaders, not loud. Not advertising. That's part of healthy masculinity, that they're so grounded that they don't feel they need to advertise this, right? You don't see people that are like, we got to get out there and be more healthy masculine. They're like, I'm just going to model it, right? Meanwhile, the Andrew Tates of the world know I need to find insecure people or I need to find insecure men or boys to influence. And that's why he's even targeting kids that are in high school age. A majority of his workshop that he made were for high school students. My nephews were quoting that dude. So like, they know what they're doing because they realize there's a gap right now and that they can take advantage of it. And that a lot of men as well as boys right now are like, I need a strong leader. And because this guy is defending men, he must be my leader.
As a boy mom, that's really scary to think about. You know what I mean?
It is really scary.
So I feel like there's a big question here, which is, first of all, what does healthy masculinity look like? And if it is so quiet, you know, how do we find those role models? How do we share that as an alternative? And is it inherently masculine or is that just being a good leader, right? Those are a lot of questions. So take anyone that you liked there.
Yeah. So healthy masculinity replaces harmful, risky, and violent masculine attitudes and behaviors and replaces it with empathetic behavior and attitudes that benefit men's mental, emotional, and physical well-being and increase their ability to role model nonviolence, right? So a lot of the attributes of healthy masculinity can be like feeling grounded, you know, creating a certain container where someone feels safe within the container. At times it can be very linear and very goal directed, but it's not extreme. And examples of healthy masculinity would be like someone like a Michael B. Jordan, you know, from Creed. But then also, if you look at media, and there's not many, and this is why I made a workshop recently about this, a great example in media, or at least in the fictional sense, is Ted Lasso.
Right.
Ted Lasso is a great example of he's not focused on winning. He's not focused on binary thinking. He's about building relationships, creating a safe space for his staff or his team to be who they are. And he's all about growing leaders, right? He's all about building a brotherhood. And that's also a thing of like how healthy masculinity, my friend Deshaun in New York has a men's circle where men actually practice giving praise to one another, because typically men don't give praise to one another. Typically men don't even talk about their emotions with one another. That is not a normal thing.
It's sort of like making intimacy between male friends okay, you know? And yeah.
It's as simple as that, right? And you can even see women leaders that are exhibiting healthy masculinity. You know, for example, Jacinda Ardern during COVID. She was the New Zealand prime minister. At the same time, she was very compassionate and empathetic towards her citizens. She also was very clear and set boundaries of like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do a hard lockdown. It's going to be tough. We're not going to let people in. Commerce might change because of this, which will affect your finances. I will figure out a way in which to cover that, but I'm going to do it. And because of that, they had the lowest COVID rates and the lowest COVID death rates per capita in the world. When you're around someone that has healthy masculinity, you feel safe. You recognize where they are and where they're grounded. Toxic masculine, you don't know if they're just going to blow up at any moment, right? And this is where the whole thing of like mass shootings is like quiet. Oh, I didn't know this person. Then all of a sudden, you know, they're expressing themselves in this certain way. And talk about, to get to that point, you have to have lacked empathy and compassion. And ironically enough, Dr. Stuart Brown, this is a psychologist from back in the 70s. This is one of his first studies ever did. He studied one of the first mass shootings in the U.S., the Clock Tower from University of Texas.
Right.
Back in the 1970s, right? And he studied the play history of that shooter and found that that person did not play.
Okay, so bring it back to play for a minute, because I know this is an area of focus for you over the course of your career. Play is healthy communication, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's where we learn how to be empathic.
A majority of play is collaborative. It's intuitive. It is empathetic. It builds a certain level of compassion. Play, in many ways, is feminine. I'm much more feminine in a lot of my leadership style than I am masculine, even though I'm, you know, considered a man or identify as a man, right? And what Dr. Brown found is that studying this person, he realized they became more and more disconnected with people, that he did not see them as people. And that's why he could go up to that clock tower and do that. So at the same time that I agree, gun control is probably the biggest issue that we have to address in order to solve mass shootings. We should also be looking at where are we falling short in building empathy and compassion from one another, not just for men, but just all of us. How are we doing that? Where is that disconnect?
You're sort of getting to the thing that I always bristle at a little bit. And this is not you alone. This is like a message that comes in lots of different directions. But even using the term masculine or feminine, I equally bristle at influencers who say, tap into your divine feminine power. And I'm like, can't we just talk about power? Can't we just talk about emotional intelligence? Can't we just talk about being a good leader? Like, is there a need or a value in acknowledging the ways in which certain behaviors or traits might be masculine or feminine? Or is that just overcomplicating things? Because
no, there is a value.
Okay, tell me.
There is a value, because then you actually value what that other person represents or what that other person embodies, right? If I, as a man, can recognize feminine traits within myself, I can then also connect with women that may also identify with those similar traits. Same thing with women. And we've talked about this, of there's some women, especially in leadership, that exhibit toxic masculine leadership traits. That's how they've moved up in the world, right? And in order for us to like address and be like, hey, how is that working out for you? Well, I've been promoted many times. Everyone hates me, but I've been promoted many times. In order for us to help leaders get more back to a balanced leadership style, they have to recognize where these traits are. Now, I get it. Influencers have ruined many things. So that's another thing they've ruined, right? Where like, you have to, you know, feel your divine feminine, or like, you know, you have to strong and you're healthy masculine. Like, they've made cliches like worse, right? But separating their meaning of how they're attributing it to and simply identifying traits that are typically exhibited in a masculine and feminine way, that's how we actually understand one another, because we have to recognize this idea of men are from Mars, women are from Venus type aspect, while not making it binary, recognizing that we have each so that we can understand each other, because it is complex. It's messy.
Right.
You know, it's the whole Ted Lasso of it's prog mess. And when we ignore that and we're like, can't we just talk about this? You are choosing not to see parts of people.
Right. I hear you. I feel like, you know, if I think about trans folks, or, and granted, trans folks know a lot about gender as a social construct and a performance in some ways. And then I think also about gender nonconforming folks, you know, there's sort of a radical opting out of the gender binary that happens there. And that's not to say they're not acknowledging gender and they're not acknowledging gender roles, but sort of picking and choosing and making the role that feels right to you. That's something all leaders can do, regardless of gender identity.
Well, I actually think they represent the duality that we've always been talking about, right? The gender spectrum, that we're all on a gender spectrum. We've always been. It's always both. And, you know, what the trans community is doing, which is like a gift to the world, is being like, yes, we are able to hold both. Can you hold both? And most people are like, oh my gosh, I can't. One bathroom, two bathrooms. You know, like, people are losing their mind on something that a lot of Gen Zers are like, it's not that big of a deal. They go by they. It's not hard. It's they, not he or she. And are you okay with that? And that duality is where we need to get to. And not to pick and choose, but to recognize that we have all together.
Yeah, that's interesting. I see. So to go back to sort of the very beginning of this conversation, that whole idea can be so threatening to folks who've been raised their entire life to say, no, this is manhood, full stop. This is what it means to be a good man, or a good woman for that matter. And that, you know, if you've been indoctrinated and sort of raised in the church of this is what gender means for you, that is a very threatening concept that you just mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you said raised in the church of patriarchy, right? Like, you could have a mental breakdown if you accepted a new reality, right? But the reality is coming regardless of whether you accept it or not. And that's kind of been my whole stance, why I do workshops around addressing healthy masculine and healthy feminine leadership, because I'm like, it's coming whether you like it or not. 30% of the workforce by 2030 is going to be Gen Zers, right? 10% is going to be Gen Alpha. If you are not with the program and you're still doing that old patriarchal 1950s sort of strategy of just screaming at your staff and not recognizing or not making them feel seen, heard, or appreciated, you're obsolete. In my opinion, it's just going to be obsolete.
Absolutely. And so you're starting to make the business case there. And that was sort of where I wanted to land on, which is, okay, let's say we believe in the importance of adapting beyond a stereotypically toxic masculine leadership style. What can folks do about that? Like, how can you begin to make that transition into what's next?
So my recommendation is to first look at your leadership, as well as look at your staff, and be like, well, what traits do we currently have? What traits are we currently celebrating in leadership and staff? You know, and look from it from a healthy masculine, healthy feminine place, and then be like, what traits are we currently missing? Okay, all right, do we need these traits that are currently missing? And if so, how do we want to cultivate those, right? And that's what I would start to ask, like, what feminine leadership traits like intuition, collaboration, connection, coaching, right? The whole world of coaching comes from a feminine leadership standpoint, because the commanding and controlling was much more toxic masculine, right? So what traits do we currently have? What traits are we currently missing? And then what traits do we want to actually cultivate? And start from there, right? And then hire people like you, like Bossed Up, you know, or myself, to be like, okay, what do we need to, in order to do to like cultivate those? Or start looking at literature like Liz Plank, or who is the author you mentioned earlier?
Richard Reeves is out with a new book.
And then just start educating yourself on like what this style of leadership looks like and how do we cultivate this, and just start there. And then if that is even too tough for you, then I would simply ask yourself, well, there's two things. I would ask, does your staff feel seen, heard, and appreciated? What does that even look like? So have that conversation with them. And then if that is too hard for you, then I would ask, what is the worst behavior you're currently tolerating? And simply ask yourself, how do we address that behavior? You could even start there. So there are many different stages to this, but all of them are built around compassion, empathy, and shared humanity, and bringing that back to work. And that's how you make work suck less.
Yeah, absolutely. And I almost wonder, you know, do you see an ERG strategy around this? Because we've long worked with organizations that have women's employee resource groups. And, you know, more and more, those ERGs are opening their programming up to folks across the gender spectrum. Do you see a world in which there will be men ERGs, like men of, you know, Disney coming together, or men at Meta having an ERG to focus on masculinity at work?
I mean, that would be amazing if there were more men's circles in general, right? That are like, how do we cultivate healthy masculinity and that space? I think what's fascinating, and this is especially happening in the tech world right now with all the layoffs, is before they lay off people, they're getting rid of ERGs, which is probably the worst thing you can do, because that is where most staff, if they don't feel it within their team, that's the one place where they feel seen, heard, and appreciated, right?
Elon Musk really set that model, didn't he, at Twitter?
Exactly.
It's insane.
Right? And talk about, like, I learned this quote from a play mentor and thought leader, Kevin Carroll, who would say, you'll find the future where people are having the most fun. You know, that's a Steven Johnson quote. No fun's happening at Twitter, right? So you're not seeing innovation. You're not seeing people going above and beyond. You're not seeing, like, if anything, people are leaving or they're just hanging out until the next thing. So you should be asking yourself as a leader also, what am I doing to cultivate a psychologically safe space where people could create ERGs, where people could create groups where they feel more appreciated? Because that's where you're going to get innovation. Innovation only happens when people are allowed to play and allowed to take risks and allowed to be more of themselves. Not that BS authentic, show up as your authentic self and blah, blah, blah in the cliche way, but honestly being honest and being open to trying things out without feeling that they're going to get reprimanded for it.
Absolutely. Amazing, Jeff. Thank you so much. I could talk with you forever about this stuff. There's so much more to be said. Where can our listeners hear more from you?
So if you want to see my ridiculous videos that I make mocking the workplace, my handle is Jeff Harry Plays, JeffHarryPlays. And that's on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Medium, YouTube, all of the things. And then if you want to work with me, simply go to rediscoveryourplay.com and click on the Let's Play button. And let's figure out how to make work suck less, because it really doesn't have to.
I love it. And they're listening to this podcast right now. So let's put a shameless plug here in for your podcast. Tell us more about your show.
Oh, yeah. So I have a podcast, and I actually just did a talk on this. My talk is Why Ted Lasso's Masculine and Feminine Leadership Matters. And it was inspired by a podcast that I do with my colleague, Dimple Dabalia, whose background is in positive psychology as well as mine. And what we do is, through the lens of positive psychology and leadership development, we break down all of the Ted Lasso episodes. And we're about to launch season 3, May 1st. Hey, and the podcast is called What Would Ted Lasso Do? Because we're constantly asking ourselves, what would Ted Lasso do? So that's wwtldpodcast.com.
I'll drop links to all of those great resources in today's show notes. Thank you again, Jeff, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. This was awesome.
For links to all of those resources, head to bossedup.org/episode406. That's bossedup.org/episode406. And now I want to hear from you. What do you make of this conversation around toxic masculine leadership? Do you agree that there's a masculine and a feminine kind of leadership? Or are you a little bit on the fence, like I am, about using those terms to describe any kind of leadership? I'm genuinely curious to keep the conversation going and hear what you think about what we discussed here today. You can join us in the Bossed Up Courage community on Facebook or Bossed Up's new and growing group on LinkedIn. I'll drop both of those links in today's show notes for you to hop in there and weigh in with your thoughts. Until next time, let's keep bossing in pursuit of our purpose, and together, let's lift as we climb. Let's face it, speaking up at work can be really hard to do, especially for women and women of color. When the stakes are high and you've already worked so hard to just be the only woman in the room and you want to get everything right, you want to have all your facts and figures accurate before making your voice heard, it's just so much easier to stay silent instead. Researcher Deb Jahansky calls this loss of voice phenomenon, and it actually emerges in adolescent women at greater rates than men, and it sticks with us for the rest of our lives. Self-silencing behavior can actually become an unconscious habit unless we consciously engage in practicing our assertive communication skills. And we here at Bossed Up have set out to help women like you do just that. Speak Up, my live assertive communication course, is back open for enrollment, and we're kicking off a new cohort launching this June. Over the course of 8 life-changing weeks, you'll have access to interactive online curriculum and live weekly practice sessions where you, Irene, and I, and a cohort of fellow Speak Up bosses who are owning their voice, overcoming the social messages that have taught us to keep silent, and really learning to strategically and assertively communicate when it matters most, will actually have the practice time to rewire our brains, create new neural pathways, and build better habits when it comes to speaking up with confidence and precision and assertively communicating in the workplace. Learn more and enroll today to secure your spot at bossedup.org/speakup. That's bossedup.org/speakup.